Hello and welcome to this episode of The Dive presented by Honda, season 5, episode 12. And let's just start it off with the most important news. Stitch was able to come on the podcast last week, so I demand another appearance at Sale.
I'll see if he wanders over here. I tried to call him over earlier, and he just wasn't having it. So I think
this episode sucks.
He can smell when we're trying to use him for views. You know, he comes over naturally. Yeah. It's all cute and stuff. If you're like got like food in one hand, like, oh, look how much he loves me. He's licking
look at the camera.
I see. Well, fine. We'll move on to some regular global news then. Starting with North America, we did have the coaching staff of the split award given out. This one is always really hard because we don't have, you know, we aren't examining the coaches. You don't see coaches, you know, performance, or nobody really releases inside videos on coaching staff anymore, even though we have had sparse ones throughout the history. So what'd you guys think?
I mean, I feel like the first place team winning coach of the split is the most likely thing to happen every single split, and you would need a stronger, more compelling narrative and reason to kind of go against the grain for a lot of people.
Yeah, I would say I usually look at, since it is so hard, try and look at things like on paper, if this roster you would not expect to be super good, for it to have improvement throughout the year, these types of things you can feel pretty safe about attributing to coaching staff. You know, drafts, you have to keep in mind players and can that player actually play different champions and stuff like that. So that also, you know, takes some extra, you know, wiggle room right there. But honestly, you know, I think teams like Dignitas, you know, considering this last split, deserve definitely a good look. Cloud9, I wasn't super like against them getting it because they did have the increase in performance over from Lock-in, you know, over the course of spring. That I'm kind of looking for, but I really do also heavily look at the stuff like, wow, look at this Dignitas roster. We all had them at the bottom, and look at the performances that were coming from that squad. So I think there's some other ones to nominate or at least get close around this year.
I didn't vote. I never vote for coach of split just because I don't feel like I have enough, you know, insight. Like, or if I have insight into one team, I don't feel like I have an equal amount of insight into other teams. That's just kind of my thing. But like, I was expecting Dignitas to win. I thought that they were going to be a shoo-in just based off of expectation versus reality, right? So I actually was pretty surprised that Cloud9 won. They obviously did pretty well in the regular season. They, you know, were the first seed, one win above second place. But it wasn't like they had a mind-blowing split based on expectation. So to me, it was like a little bit surprising. Because I thought that they were closer to where everyone kind of expected them to end than a team like Dignitas, which, again, it's hard to know what to attribute that to, right? Is that the coaches, or is that the influence of Afro and Dardock, or is that the just these players just working really hard and being better than they expected? You know, it's hard to know exactly why teams do exactly how they do, especially if a team doesn't really release a lot of content and you don't get to see what the coaches are doing on a daily basis at all.
Yeah, I think the Dignitas one, I think I voted for it first. I can't remember my exact ballot. I think I also had TSM in there, kind of tracking what Kobe was talking about, improvement as well, just like how bad they looked the first couple weeks of the regular season and some of the struggles they're having in lock into the pretty cohesive team that they ended up being by the end of spring. And I think the Dig thing, like, you know, they didn't win. It's fine. It's one of the awards I think I probably care the least about arguing about.
Yeah.
But I will say there's a lot of people now that Dig lost this weekend and lost with some pretty awful drafts, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
We'll get into that one for sure.
Yeah, well, that's a can of worms we'll unpack.
It's a regular season award.
That's what I was going to say. It is a regular season award. But I was going to be like, yeah, I don't really care too much about it, but I think I did have those exact three teams that you mentioned, Mark, were the three that I voted for, was Dig, TSM, and Cloud9 as the coaching staff. And it actually is our Honda MVP question again. you know, this section we have a symbiotic relationship. So for our hum on the MVP section, I already touched on my kind of criteria, and you sound like you guys have very similar ones for what makes a coaching staff worthy of the title of coaching staff of the split. And I honestly think you know, one of the most forefront answers is that it's, we need more insight. You know, we need to actually, like, all right, we're gonna do some tours today, and we get to go spend a day shadowing each, you know, different team coach.
I feel like this is actually easy to answer compared to the voting, because I know what makes a coaching staff worthy of coach of the split for me. I just don't get to find out if they're doing
okay,
that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the difference. So, like, what makes them worthy? I think it's getting more out of your players, right? It's being able to be a flexible team, a creative team. These are all things that are beneficial. But above all, being a successful team and getting the most out of your players, right? And the easiest way to judge that is seeing teams, you know, go above what expectations are. You know, players improving. Things working together, you know, level one plans that are clearly pre-planned by the coach, intelligent drafts, you know, game plans to execute on those drafts, being able to play multiple play styles. Like, these things, I think, are all part of what makes a coaching staff great. And there are coaching staffs out there that are doing this. It's just hard to know. And for me, when I talk to, even sometimes I'll talk to like three players on a team, and they have wildly different opinions on the coaching staff, right? And it can vary extremely, right? And I'm not going to like out anyone or anything like that.
Do it.
But
spill
the
tea.
For coaching staffs in the past, I'll even say you'll have people say like, ah, this guy literally taught me nothing the whole split. And then the next person is like, well, they were okay. And the next person is like, this is the best coach I ever had. He did this and this. And you're like, well, the answer is probably somewhere in the middle, right? Maybe they just didn't get along personally, or maybe there's other things. But it's just really interesting to hear such wildly varying opinions on coaches. Even when you talk to coaches, they'll have different opinions on the other coaches.
Go ahead, Mark. I have so many jumping points, but you haven't. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, my thought's actually more like, about the award specifically than some of the things that Azale was saying. Because, I mean, if we're talking about, like, I'm a GM and I'm hiring a coach, like, you goddamn right I'm going to look into these things. Like, I'm going to do my due diligence. I'm going to interview all the players. I'm going to work with ask the other coaches who are not coming over with you, or if I can get access to them. Like, you know, I'm going to look into a lot of this stuff. This is an award voted on by tons of people. This is not, to me, that. It's a fun award that people want to hear talked about. You give it out and you move on with your life. And so that's why, for me, I don't feel bad like being like, well, I don't have insight into everything. Because to me, it's like, who cares? I think it's just
a fun award, though. I feel like people talk about like Reapert, right? It's like Reapert is multiple time coach of the split. Therefore, he is the best coach in the LCS.
No, I think people talk about Reapert being the best coach in the LCS when these actual arguments, like the ones you were talking about before, where they're saying like his teams always feel like they get better over the course of the split. They have good performances at international competition where other teams in North America traditionally struggle. Like, if I was going to make a case for why I thought Reapert was a good coach, the last thing I would bring up would be his coach of the split awards, at least for me. And I think that's why the coach of the split award is almost like a narrative award in a lot of ways, to Kobe's point. You know, did you underperform or overperform from your expectations? Because, like, there's so many things that really go into coaching, like personality management and stuff like that, which isn't even game knowledge. And I feel like all people talk about with coaching is game knowledge. And there's actually so much that goes on. And to your point, you're never going to know that kind of stuff. And when I'm voting on this award, I'm not even trying to figure that stuff out, because I'm not making a long-term financial commitment decision to somebody. I'm voting on an award.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it. There were okay. I'm trying to go back and remember all the different jumping. Okay, one of them, one of them was around. One of the early points that you made, Azale, about like the team being successful. Just like a thought experiment. If it was like Golden Guardians, how well would Golden Guardians have to do to get coaching staff of the split? Because they don't have to win the split in order to get coaching staff for their split, right? Because I would say Golden Guardians, like, taking those players, if they were like,
if they got playoffs and got 3-0'd in playoffs, I would say your coaching staff is split. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I don't really care what happens in playoffs. If you made playoffs,
just six.
Your coaching staff is split. Sixth place, congratulations. I'm voting for the award. Mm-hmm.
With that roster being basically what felt like guaranteed 10th, if they got six, it would be like, my God, an arrow is like going to get the fattest paycheck next offseason.
And there are other things, too, that you generally attribute to coaching. And again, you can't say, oh, this is definitely the coaching, because it could literally be one of the players. Like you have, you know, like you're mentioning Afremu or Dardock or something like that. You know, and Bjergsen always watched a bunch of, before he was a coach, you know, would bring ideas and concepts to the team, like level ones or, you know, pick bench strategies and all those types of things. But, you know, those are the types of things you kind of like group up and put in that bundle. Man, I can't remember what my second jump in for it is. It was the one I was more excited to talk about, but we'll just move on.
It was brilliant. Would have been the best jump in point.
That's what I'm talking about.
Kobe's going to write out this like dissertation in the Discord chat after this. And
yeah,
this is what I was going to say.
It's going to be halfway between our you know, final setup of next week's
4
next
week. Tonight. He's like,
I remembered. It was
guys, wakes up in a cold sweat.
Guys.
Wake up. I've got to tell you.
Zill's going to be like, great point. Shut up. All right, continuing with some more broad strokes of news. There was actually an article about Cloud9 Fudge where he talked about some of his, you know, strategy, I guess, with coming into the league as, you know, a trash talker, wanting to be more involved in you know, the community. And honestly, I really like this take where he's talking about coming in as a rookie. We have so many rookies that come in and they're just like, yep, good game. I tried my best. You know, my opponents are going to be great. You know, have a nice day. And they're kind of forgettable. And you don't, you know, they're not really a personality that sticks. But he's in a position on Cloud9, you know, with the team that probably spent the most of any team and money on a roster and are probably going to be number one. Spoiler, they turned it out to you know, finish number one. To put himself out there in the spotlight. And even though he is a rookie, he's like, I'm gonna start trash talking so that it puts more pressure on me to deliver on, you know, playing well and kind of crafting a new space where we lost guys like Doublelift that were, you know, a huge boon to the entire league as far as entertainment, not just play.
I think it's cool. I mean, I think really at the end of the day, whatever works for you, right? You know, he's basically saying by coming out and going big and saying, yeah, everyone else is ass and I'm going to stomp them. I'm not worried about anyone. And then he feels like, whoa, okay, well, time to live up to it, right? And that's it, is kind of, if that's what drives you, then great. I think it's similar to like people posting online and like to be accountable to like their workout goals or whatever. You know, Kobe goes online, he's like, I'm gonna be able to bench 250 by the end of the year, like, you know, count on it, right?
I already can, then, no problem.
Then when you're feeling lazy, you might be like, yeah, okay, I gotta get in there, I gotta get, you know. So I think it's just like a self-motivation tactic, which I think is kind of cool. I do think that one of the things you mentioned in there, Kobe, was key, that he is on Cloud9. I think it's a lot harder to do this and come out looking okay when you're on a bad team. You know, if you're on Golden Guardians and you come in doing this, at the end of the day, it's just hard to look good on a really bad team. And that's just League of Legends. It's a team game. So when you're on a great team, there's a much better chance of you being able to do it. But I love it. I mean, if people have confidence, if they want to come in with swagger, if they can back it up, it's friggin' awesome. If they can take the heat that they're going to get if they suck, that's awesome too. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think that's a key part, because Fudge did not deliver right out of lock-in. Yep. And I like the way that he took it. He was like, yeah, you know what? I suck. I know that I'm sucking right now. I'll play better. I got to play better, everybody. So I thought that was funny. But it also, it made me laugh when you were talking. I was imagining how even if it was Niles with this season of Golden Guardians, and after every game, you know, he's still just talking trash. He's like, this idiot got lucky, you know, like, oh, you got to bring three people to top lane to kill me. That type of stuff is really funny. You know, even if he is 10th, even if he does have the worst KDA in LCS history, if he's like kind of embracing it and doing it like jokingly also, I honestly think that would be funny, and that would be, you know, beneficial also, just to have Just to have that look on it.
I mean, it's making me think of so many hilarious memes. Like, I could just see Niles, like, embracing the reality denial mouth fight. I don't know if you guys ever remember that video. It's like the one where it's like, the Scion doesn't even do it, or the mouth fight doesn't even do anything. Is this person getting killed over and over again? Have you guys not seen this video? It is, like, part of League of Legends lore. Up there with, like, the, you know, the, like, my mind's telling me no. You know that one? Like, there's just some of these videos that, like, everyone needs to see to be... Yeah, the least something like that. Everyone needs to see to be a true League of Legends fan. So
I'm going to contest you on that one.
Nope, you're not a true League of Legends fan, Kobe.
Clearly not League of Legends fan.
Apparently, the dive is manned by two frauds. You know, I don't know how this happened.
I think Mark's got some weird stuff going on over there.
Yeah,
I've been
a real
playing
Redditor,
this game
I should say.
Since beta, watching competitive scenes all over the world since this actually existed. Before the game was even released, and I just
you're a fake fan.
I'm just a fraud.
You know, that's what it is. You're a great player, but you're a fake fan.
I haven't. You know, we tune into this YouTube video as well, and it's got like 13 views and something, and it's on Mark's channel.
It's
actually
got taken
Mark's
down
like,
a bunch of times.
Mark's like,
sure.
You know what? If you haven't seen my video on Malphite, you're not a real League fan.
It's actually him playing the Malphite. You know?
Here's the thing. The YouTube comments are going to have my back for sure. The Reddit comments are going to have my back for sure. The other thing that made me laugh a lot was when Kobe or Azale was talking about like the workout thing and like posting online. It was something like those wholesome memes, you know, of like all like the super like Photoshop rip dudes like writing encouraging words to each other.
Yeah,
I can just see all the top laners like photoshopped into like rip dudes being like, "Yeah, it's okay, you went 0-10 and got camped this game. I like how you still went out there and gave it your best shot." I like the trash talk. I think it's fun for the scene. Yeah. As long as you have the mentality to endure when people are going to try and throw your words back at you, it's all upside for me.
And as long as you don't go too far with it, right? If Fudge was, like you don't go personal. If he was being crass with it, then people would turn real quick
for sure.
But yeah,
all right, new champ. Gwen, we got to see a little bit of a preview of it, you know, see some abilities. I don't think they actually like, released what the abilities are, but they kind of had a video of her, you know, snipping people up with scissors and stuff. What are you thinking?
Mark, go ahead. I know you wanted to talk about some anime character.
No, I mean, it's funny because I complained about this with Viego a little bit. But for me, I think... this one bothered me a little less. I don't know. It's like about execution and like what my expectations were. I wasn't expecting Gwen where I had, you know, built up huge expectations of what Viego was going to be a little bit from how long the Rune King had been around in lore. I think her design look is actually really cool. I understand that some of the complaints the community has about like the living doll aspect versus kind of just looking like a normal human. And like if you didn't know the lore of this part, you wouldn't see it in this part. I get that a little bit, but I thought her animations look cool, or splash art look cool. I thought, like, visually, a lot of the things looked really cool. So I wouldn't complain. As much as I'm a anime, I watch a ton of anime, I complain about anime, but this one
as
didn't
much as
me.
You are a professional complainer.
Yes. If you're never satisfied. Never mind.
I am a tryhard, so I tried to watch it to look at what the abilities are, just to get an idea early to see
CC immunity.
To see if I could jungle it. I'm assuming since they stated that they want it to be a top laner, and they did not state that they want it to be a jungler, usually what you do to differentiate those two is have longer cooldowns on what would be the scissor swipe? That's what I'm looking at for my jungle clear, the main thing, because it's AoE. Like that looked like this the easiest. And it was actually maybe she just
keep
was
going,
double. She was just double
keep doing this.
Yeah. I think it's good. She was just double casting
fingers.
It all the time. I'm on Krugs, Azale. Now I'm on Raptors. Now I'm on
Kicking your lane.
That's gonna be my new move. Yo, I'm a Gwen May. What up? The CC immunity that Mark mentioned is the main thing. As soon as I saw that, and it was in every clip, I was like, if that is not her ultimate ability, this is gonna be kind of busted because it moved with her. And it looked like the way that it works is that there's no way they would make it a zone and have it always move with you. It moves once with you when you step out of it once, because the second time in most of the clips when she would move out of it, it would disappear. So that's what I'm assuming it is. And if the reason that they made it a zone is not just so that you can only move it once, if there's something around, it gives something to teammates, or I swear to God, if it gives crowd controlled immunity to teammates. That is insane.
Everyone's safe and inside my zone.
It's going to be instantly nerfed. I seriously doubt that. What?
I have some insight into it. There was a tweet from Mark Yetter. So this is what kind of made me interested about it. He said, Gwen should be an interesting addition. A squishy AP fighter without the tools to assassinate range carries would be doomed. But that's where Gwen's unique skills come in. A pocket of hallowed mist protecting her for the time she needs to go toe-to-toe with other frontliners. So that, I think, is the kind of CC immunity thing that you're talking about.
You can see it.
It also seems like maybe you can't attack her outside of that mist or something. Like, protect her for the time she needs to go toe-to-toe with frontliners. Sounds kind of like that. So I don't know if it's like,
you think a Zen ult plus CC immunity? Like, that's all right. This champ is getting nerfed. I'm just making the call right now. This champ is going to get nerfed. It's got a dash. It has two damaging abilities. One is big AoE for wave control. At least it gave us this, though.
Yeah, yeah. I think it sounds cool, though. Like, the idea of a squishy AP, like, champion that has to go frontline, who isn't diving backline, who's attacking other frontliners. Sounds kind of interesting. You know, that at least is a bit of a different look from other things we've seen in League of Legends. Remains to be seen how it actually kind of like goes into the game and how well it actually works. The intended gameplay isn't always the gameplay that ends up being best or the gameplay that ends up being popular.
Yeah, I mean, if like I said, if the cooldown on scissor swipe is low enough, then she's going
into the jungle you go.
She does have a dash, and that's that's a pretty good requirement. What about some actual global news then? G2 had a banger series going the distance, and one of the most funny Smite interactions that we have had in a long, long time, where we got one jungler popping over the back of the pit to Smite. I believe I saw Sion. Like, it was like almost 2,000 health still on the Baron, and like he smited Sion. So it's just like the worst of all scenarios, even if the Baron health was low, it's on the champion. And then you have Jankos just not smiting at all. And his reasoning afterwards, he said on his stream, is like, I hit the target champions only button. That you have to keep it down. So it's like it's not like he toggled
it
on.
You can have a toggle.
You have a toggle one also. I have only the keep it down one that turns it red.
I use toggle. I couldn't even for my toggle.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's proof to my point then why I don't use the toggle. I just use the holding the key down one because for junglers, that is bad. That is so bad. It led to one of the most hilariously bad smiting dual smites ever.
There's also no reason to have it toggled on at the Baron Pit. There's no minions.
I mean, if
there,
you toggle it for something else and then you forget you have it toggled on still, then you go to this.
It was really funny though. But the reason that game 4 was so comical to me was because it wasn't just that one real like kind of faceplant moment for the smites. It was like 3 in a row. There was that one where Gilius blast cones over the back of the wall, and yeah, it was at 2k health immediately, not even waiting, just smites the Sion. So wrong person and wrong health. You shouldn't even be pressing the button. Then it just slowly dies. Jankos doesn't smite it. Then fast forward, and there, you know, Jankos has an option to actually secure the soul like for his team, and he's like kiting back towards his team that's doing the dragon because the other team had just done Baron, and he smites the Alistar as he's running towards the dragon, then doesn't have smite, and Udyr just walks in the pit and goes cha cha and just takes
Phoenix. Cone arm first,
and then again they go back to the dragon pit. And Jankos is dead, but then the Gilius is there in the pit, and G2 is trying to rush down this dragon, and they're just shooting it. Everyone's just hitting it, and Gilius doesn't even smite, doesn't even use the smite at all, and Orianna takes it with like an auto attack, and it's just like, what is happening with these two junglers and their smites? Like 3 times in a row, it was ridiculous, but. It was a really fun series, but game 4 was definitely cracking me up. with the
That's
Jumbos.
What I was going to say is, like, I love that series. I mean, we haven't had a five-game banger yet here in North America. And, like, just seeing how funny that was. Even game five was super close the entire time, pretty much. You know, Schalke even had a goal lead for a portion of it. And I had that on the big screen. I was watching LCS on my phone, like, on my couch. It was such, like, a fun experience just being able, like, to look up and look back down whenever, like, a big thing was happening. And that I was loving that match, and this is why G2 has so many fans. You know, they're gonna get on stage, and you never know what's gonna happen. You're gonna have a hoot.
Got but you still know they're the best there as well,
and you still know they're the best team in Europe. So you're like, you're not really worried. You know, they can do things like this, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
They're not gonna do that in the finals.
Yeah,
probably.
Hopefully.
But I'm excited having playoff time, you know, not just for NA, but, you know, LPL, LCK playoffs coming up. LEC has obviously started. Going to be watching a lot of all the playoffs from the different regions, getting ready for MSI on the horizon. So we'll probably start talking a bit more about, you know, global news and whatnot, as you guys are all going to be interested in seeing our thoughts on the teams going into MSI.
Yeah, I was going to jump in on LPL. Because I am so hyped for the junglers, the new junglers in LPL, because I always try and, you know, scout, you know, the KR, solo queue, top junglers that they have on there. And so I've been following the IG jungler for a super long time, Shun, but also the jungler they have now for RNG, Wei, is absolutely insane. And it's just all these newer, younger talents coming up and being on these top teams. That's so exciting for this region. I think, again, LPL is going to come in as an extremely scary powerhouse. You know, RNG this time around, they've dropped, what, 2 games total? Or a series at least, more and more games of that, just 2 series dropped. So it's, yeah, I think they're going to come in with many possible representatives.
And a lot of good teams this year.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not just RNG. They have EDG right behind
EDG,
them with Viper.
Top is doing
Viper
well,
who
JD's doing well.
Viper gets to count as a rookie, by the way, in LPL. The rookie awards have Viper and Nuguri in there. And I'm just like, come on, that's not fair. They have real rookies. Like, what the hell is going on here?
World champion. Rookie, by the way.
I'm just like, what the...
Yeah, it's pretty funny. The LPL awards are pretty cool, though. They do a whole big award show. All right. Before we dive into our meta news, just a quick reminder that if you've got questions, we've got answers, send them to the Anchor page, anchor.fm. You can search the Dive LOL or tweet to us using the hashtag Dive LOL. Also, if you like what we do or not, send us the Apple Podcast reviews. We love the feedback, and the funnier, the better. Helps us a lot, and we'll have all the info in the description below, so you can find all that there if you're looking for it. Now on to some meta news. So what do you guys been thinking about playoffs and everything so far? You know, like, there's been some change-ups as far as the picks. We got to see, you know, more Ahri coming out. When you're looking at, you know, LEC, there was a fair bit of Vayne coming out into the Kai'Sa. Anything that's been kind of catching your guys' eyes?
Yeah, Ahri is booty if you don't, you know, get some picks and roam around on it and get into some actual damage. I think Soligo, the old Q for, you know, Ahri, actually, Q was looking like it was healing enemies as it was coming back, passing through towards the end there.
But he built Liandry's.
One game.
Yeah, one game. Then he built Everfrost in the next game, which if you're going to use this champion, which I think it does have, you know, use cases. I don't think it's generally powerful, and I think there were a lot of holes in the dig side of the draft where we might as well, you know, jump into this can of worms for that series. But I think that Ahri, if you are facing one of these team comps that we have seen a lot of teams use that are, you know, 5 basically squishy champions looking for split push pressure, looking for early lane dominance to try and, you know, push out lanes and try and snowball the game and play like 1-3-1 and stuff. I think Ahri can be great in picking off champions on those types of teams. The CC available with Everfrost, with the mobility of your ultimate and into charm, I think can have use cases, but it's not going to be it's not going to be able to stack up with the control mages. That there's a reason that they've been dominating the pick ban in the mid lane here with all these, you know, higher DPS AP mages, you know, threats from the mid lane. What do you guys think? Like, I feel like it's has some use cases. It's just not one of the generally powerful. I saw a lot of people just saying, Ahri is totally butt. Get her out of here. Never want to see this champion, you know, throw her in the trash can.
I think like the games that Jensen played it, I wasn't like, oh my God, what are you doing here? And even game one of that series, I liked what they were trying to do. And they were actually doing it pretty well. I still think he should have gone Everfrost over the Liandry's. I understand that they have a kind of a beefy front line they're playing against. But your goal is not to burn down the front line. Your goal is to use your pick comp to get picks. And Everfrost lends to that play style way better than the Liandry. So I still would have liked to have seen the Everfrost. But like that first game, I really liked what they were trying to do. They have Kalista Thresh for a lot of bot side pressure. Mm-hmm. You have who is the jungler again? Oh, I'm blanking really hard. It was
Volibear. Volibear, GP top, Ahri mid, and then
pre-buff, by the way, because since we are on 11.5 for some reason.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so this is that's a tangent. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the Ahri counter picking to the Ahri, so that you can get generally mid control because it's a bit of a counter matchup for the Ahri. Then you have your bot side winning with your Kalista Thresh. You get to stack dragons. You have a pretty huge pick comp with this, and a little bit of team fighting assistance with the GP and scaling. And even he can like chain barrels if you land a hook into charm into root and stuff like that in the mid to late game when the barrel cooldown gets low enough. So I saw what the comp wanted to do. They were executing decently well. They had third Drake stacked up, and they were heading into their fourth Drake, and then Dig just like super whiffed their engage, which was, I don't know why they're forcing that hard. They should be making the enemy team walk into them at the dragon while kind of building up
the one throwing Afro over the wall.
Yeah, they just hubbed him over the wall, and then Afro whiffed the hook, and then
if he hit it though, Neo would have been out of range. It made no sense.
Yeah, it was just a crazy over engage, and then from then on, they're just gonna get outscaled, and that was the problem with all their drafts. Is their 5v5s are just worse every single game. They're giving up Hecarim, Rell, Kai'Sa for two of the last two games. The other one had the Alistar. There's just power picks. Gnar is in there. Like, we did a presence graphic, and like most of 100 Thieves champions were like 90% presence, and like on Dignitas' side, it's like 40% champions because they're all like situational. And whenever you pair a bunch of like situational picks up, it's like you're just generally weaker.
I just quickly want to jump in on you on the Afromu Thresh Kalista game because it was so funny, and you guys phrased it as they threw him in. You got to throw yourself in on Kalista, okay? Kalista can lead you to water and actually, you know, cast the R, put you in the little ball. But you got to be the one that's like, I'm going this way. I'm going through the river here, you know, right into the rest of the team. And it led to one of the, like, oh, how did I get here? No, get me out moments.
I was honestly so disappointed by their drafting. Like, I hated that series. I thought Dignitas played so bad and drafted so bad. And I was really disappointed. I mean, game one, I'll give them. I thought it was a cool attempt. But it was like past 15, 20 minutes, it was like, all right, well, their 5v5 is so much better. You didn't get soul. You didn't get enough. This game's over. And then game two, there wasn't even like a whiff of hope. Like, it was like you gave them every single pick they could ever want as though you didn't have bans or picks yourself. And then you didn't even get ahead early. You lost bot against a team that hard beats you in every other stage of the game. And then game three, it was like they weren't even trying. Like, they were trolling. Like,
mental boomed.
It actually just seemed mental boomed. Game three felt like, oh, you actually got a comp where I can maybe see you winning. You drafted for some 5v5 here. But I just felt like even game one, where I liked the attempt, I felt like they overcommitted so much in the bans to try to make this work, right? Like, every game for Thresh, they were doing three support bans. They were doing, like, TK, Nautilus, Set. Like, if you have to triple ban support to make Thresh a good pick, and you are then giving over Kai'Sa, Rell, Hecarim, like, all of these picks that are just, like, S tier, everyone wants to get first pick, it's like, how does this make sense? Thresh isn't that dominant that it's better than all of these S tier picks that people would first pick.
This is what I was going to explicitly flame them for, is all of these support bans, and you're giving over Rell the best support in the whole game right now with the perfect combinations to go with Rell. You're like, do you want a dive comp, 100 Thieves, the dive team? Hello? The team that has relied on this from more than any other team in the LCS. Would you like the best jungler in the game, Hecarim, with dive champion, best support to go along with it, best the marksman, other horse, dive Rell, and the best AD carry that follows up on these dives, Kai'Sa? And they're like,
how about Orianna sure. to enable the wombo and a good side right. laner, Gnar, to follow up on the team fight?
It was mind blowing, for sure. Usually, I like to be the one on the side that's like, you know what? Yeah, everybody's just talking so much about draft, but like, I want to look at gameplay. I still want to look at gameplay because it still matters, and you still have to execute, you still have to win these team fights. But
yeah,
man, even with like some of the mistakes that are going on in this game, when you have to face that, it's like, what the?
Oh yeah, how do you win?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty atrocious, and like you're saying, it's not just like the comps that they ended up with. Like, you know, the third game comp was okay. It was again that they had to like first pick Renekton after banning the Gnar because Fake God was getting slammed, and then once you ban the Gnar, somebody's just going to take the Renekton. So then they have to first pick the Renekton, and then it's like, wait, but on just a champion power level, that thing's not nearly as strong as, like you're saying, the Kai'Sas, the Rells, and the Hecarims and stuff like that, and. It was just a total draft gap every single game. Like I said, other than game one, which at least had like an early game win condition of stacking dragons and bot side playmaking, this just had the rest of them just felt like just worse versions of the team's comps in a lot of ways and can't do what they do.
Doom Should series. We move on to previewing some of the matches, or do you want to talk back about the other one as well?
I think we got to go forward, onwards and upwards. We can't be going backwards with these teams because we're in the lower bracket. So guess what? You're eliminated. Thank you for...
Damn, Kobe's just not even giving any respect to EG. Get out of here. Get out of his life. He'll see you in 6 weeks or whatever.
Well, we'll probably touch on it a little bit when we talk about the
yeah,
TSM.
Yeah, that's
right?
The thing. In talking about TSM's upcoming match, we'll talk about the team that they beat.
Okay.
They who must not be named. So, how about we start with the TSM one then? Because it is TSM versus 100 Thieves. These are the two teams talking about from this last weekend anyway. So let's incorporate them as a matchup against each other. I do not think that TSM will be giving over Hecarim, Rell, Kai'Sa combinations every single game to 100 Thieves. Even though we saw some good things out of them, I didn't really change my opinion at all of 100 Thieves off of this series because I came into it thinking, yes, their bottom lane is the main go-to win condition. That is so much for this team, and they do need someday on the top side to be strong in the 4-1 or, you know, create opportunities for them with, you know, flank plays and stuff like that. I thought maybe I raised a little bit of the bar with, how well someday absolutely, trash Fake God and a lot of these Gnar into GP matchups, and that was definitely good to see. But with that coming so quickly off their Cloud 9-1, I was like, yeah, I still honestly see the matchup very, very much the same way for this team. And I think every team that goes against 100 Thieves should be focusing on their bottom lane is the biggest threat. That's how they want to win the game.
Yeah, I think I feel bad for 100 Thieves fans in a lot of ways where like it's so easy to detract from that series win despite how dominant they looked in it. Because like the drafting that we're talking about just being so bad, that's all anyone's going to talk about. And it's hard to cover real improvements that might have happened in the week because it's like, well, you're just like auto winning the game. You have a 90% win chance in almost any single one of these games just based off draft probably, you know? And so I agree with you that like I don't walk away being like, wow, 100 Thieves, that was insane. Oh, gameplay improvement, like love to see it. I think like you said, Someday and Closer as well had much better series. So that was really good to see, but like I think it was game two, might have been game one. I can't remember exactly which Ori game it was for Ryoma.
Oh, the first one where he missed every single shockwave?
He was just missing shockwaves left and right. And I was like, my God, if this was like a close game, against a team that's not just going to auto lose to you if you get outscaled, or if they get outscaled, like you would be losing the series because of this. Like this would be a game one loss against a team that just picked a control mage mid like a Zir or something and just went even scaling. And those are the kinds of things I look at where I'm like, okay, when you go against TSM and it's PoE in the mid lane, like your mid laner's sombreroing three fights in a row or whatever it was, you know, and then what do you think, you know, PoE is going to be doing in those? And that's where I still am a little concerned about 100 Thieves, and as well as when they go up against Huni, who I think will do a much better job standing up to Someday when you start thinking about the drafts, which TSM generally has decent drafts. It gets a lot dicier to feel as good about 100 Thieves as you would naively just looking at how dominant their series was.
Yeah, I guess we're all feeling a similar way, right? Like I was really just trying to think about, okay, what are my takeaways? And it's hard because the only game that I felt like Dingtoss had a chance in the 5v5, I mean, game one was kind of cool, but I was like, all right, swing and a miss. Game two was just whatever. Game three, I felt like they you know, could have maybe competed in 5v5, but the game, that was the most one-sided game we've had in LCS this year, right? What was it, 16-1, 18-1 at some point, something like that? So it's really tough to have a lot of takeaways from that. I know 100 Thieves can look good if they are not, you know, really, really pushed or are able to play like these really, really strong 5v5 comps. And as you said, you know, their bot lane is set up for success and they're on these picks for like Kai'Sa, Rell, and they can really succeed there. We know that. I would say one positive that I did have for them for the series. I mean, I really don't have any negatives besides maybe the Ryoma thing. But Closer was fairly proactive in the early game. Yeah. You know, I did feel like, you know, even in game one, you know, he got up towards that top side, was able to actually kind of swing that matchup. He did have some better coordination, maybe a little bit with Someday. That has been a problem, I think, for them a fair bit. You know, when you look back to the previous series and you think about that, the Udyr game that he had, where it's like he's going in and Someday's running out, and they didn't really have any of those moments.
One of those when it was, okay, the Hecarim was plus Gnar on top side, and it didn't turn disastrous. They just didn't get a kill I thought they probably could have gotten. But yeah, it was literally only one time. So I think that is improvement, right? that it was only a small instance.
So I'm hopeful that 100 Thieves are going to look good. You know, I want this to be a really good series between them and TSM. You know, I'm excited for that. I'm just not sure what they're going to bring to the table against TSM, who is a stronger team and B is not going to give them the same level of comfort that Dig did, right? Because Dig was like, yeah, you could have all five of your most played. Sure. That's fine. Okay. and that's not going to happen against TSM, right? Like they're going to compete for these meta picks. Everyone talks about Ryoma being the most comfortable on Orianna. PoE loves play Orianna, right? Like he's going to play those control mages. They can trade back and forth. You know, you're going to get things on the side of TSM. And Someday also had a really good performance too. I think that was a positive because Fate got, I mean, everyone's kind of rewriting history a little bit on social that I had seen where it was like, oh, well, Soligo and Fate God were trash all year. They were never going to do anything here. And it's like, well, not really. Like they were actually pretty good during the regular season. So, you know, Someday did have a great series. I think he played, you know, some very good League of Legends. Like he was super dominant in game one. I think if he didn't play so well on Gnar, they wouldn't have gotten to the point where their outscaling mattered, where their 5v5 mattered, right? Because I do think that Dignitas could have maybe ran over game number one. So it'll be interesting to see how he does against Huni, who has been playing, I think, better than Someday this year.
I think we should actually look at what they might get instead, because as we're giving so much flack to the you know, Dignitas drafting, they're three bans. If we want them to change them for starting it out, from the red side, both times were the Tahm Kench, which I actually think that Senna is insanely strong right now, and I'm assuming that this Tahm Kench ban is actually a ban to try and deny Senna. So I'm not super against that. I think that, you know, Senna is extremely strong. Tristana as well. You know, is very scary for the bottom lane. And then the Renekton last pick, I think one of the big differences is that having seen the games, you know, having seen, you know, Someday's Gnar actually trashing this, you know, GP, in hindsight, we can be like, yeah, that, you know, Renekton ban didn't do anything because, you know, Someday still absolutely just ran over him. you can see where it came from, though, as it being, you know, someday's most played champion. He loves to, you know, dominate lane and, on it. I would probably drop it and focus more on the bottom lane, because you're kind of splitting a little bit of your resources here, trying to target the bottom lane. And honestly, just leave whatever possible blind on the top side for someday, because they weren't really hindering him. I do think, you know, like I said, the Tahm Kench angle at the ban is aimed at Senna. You can play Senna with other farming stuff, though. So that one's also a little wobbly.
I think it was partially the Thresh, too, right? They're trying to enable the Thresh. Like
they clearly had.
Yeah, but I talked to some of the coaches afterwards as well, to look at it. And a lot of power is in the Senna specifically. So
yeah
sure. It Ascenda, I guess, does, especially into Thresh, like if you don't have Devour for the Thresh, lose a little bit. But if you really wanted to put it in there, you could also have like, you know, Set or something.
I just want to say something really quick, and then I'll let you get in, Mark. To me, it was more about the picks and less about the bans. I actually don't think that their bans were really the problem. I think it was like, yeah, great. Okay, they first pick Hecarim or whatever. Guess what? Kai'Sa'Rel's up. Oh, I don't want either of those. You can have them. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's 100% what I was going to say, too. Like, yeah, the bans you can nitpick, and I think they could have probably found more effective ones. But the presence problem that I was talking about is because they're not taking anything away. You know, that's a large part of the why people don't get OP comps isn't because they banned it. It's because they split it up. They took components away so you couldn't get, you know, dream comps. And like, Thresh, Kalista priority, Thresh, Udyr, and then finally the first pick Renekton. It's just weird. And, you know, when you look at the priority for TSM, they're taking Zyarel, they're taking the Udyr early. And I just don't think that, you know, the Tristanas as well and stuff like that, like they're going to play the priority stuff. Whereas it almost never felt like Dignitas drafted anything other than their jungler with any sort of what is considered a high presence champion and a power pick in a lot of ways. So I think going up and looking at TSM, like I thought their drafts, while not perfect, I appreciated the new angles that they're trying to work in throwing wrinkles that it's a lot harder to draft against. Like you can't just auto pick your stuff against TSM, assuming that they can actually execute these comps with like the Nocturne and the TF and some of the new wrinkles that they're trying to work in, which I like to see.
Yeah, I think it should be interesting, right? And my question is, does TSM actually think that was good enough against CG to want to play it against 100 Thieves and want to bring it forward? Like the Nocturne top stuff was like, oh, that's kind of cool, but did it really work that well? I don't know. It didn't really feel like it was going very well. Like at the very least, the lane seemed really problematic for Huni for the most part. And it can have a lot of utility. Like, but from mostly what I've seen in solo queue, people that are playing at top, like I was watching Alfari play this pick on stream. People want to push and roam, right? And that's mostly what it feels like it's about, because you have such incredible push. But it's difficult to have enough vision to actually stay safe all the time to constantly push, and you don't really have any escapes. So if you're getting ganked or put behind it all, then it can get pretty difficult to actually play out the game. And you know, playing from top lane, of course, your ultimates are more obvious than it is when it's coming from the jungler, who like you don't always have eyes on, right? If Nocturne goes missing from top, people are going to play more defensive around mid. Of course, later in the game, that does change up a bit, but I think it's a cool pick. I just am not sure that it like worked well enough that TSM are going to want to go back to it in their next series.
I think it depends on if they feel like they can play it better, because Huni made a lot of mistakes in lane. You know, a couple times, like he would ult back in when they were like chasing him off tower dive, and he didn't have to die in that situation, and like got closer to them. And so there were a couple of different instances where not just him, but also the team playing around it, you know, and you're talking about getting vision to push up and unlock the Nocturne to then be able to have that influence, can take jungle, can take even mid lane support, these types of things to roam over there. So maybe with another week of time put in on it, they still want to use it as one of their tools, because clearly they put in a lot of time with it last, you know, the previous week, to be able to, you know, have the confidence to pick it twice.
And not even just the Nocturne, like the Camille TF game. I actually liked what they were trying to do that game, where you see the Gnar and you go for a pretty hard counter pick with the Camille TF combo that wants to kill the Gnar a bunch of times in lane and then have massive split push pressure. And realistically, I don't think many mid laners are going to bust out Nico or other things that are going to actually throw a huge wrench in that game plan. I know PoE didn't play TF great, but he was super down in pressure. He was under his turret so often. It's so difficult to make plays when you just can't leave lane without sacking waves and stuff like that. And so I think that was a huge wrench in the game plan that people didn't give enough credit to Jizuke for having, about being able to say, oh, you want to snowball topside? Well, have fun getting out of mid lane right now. Because usually TF is just so hard to shut down with the range. He just throws out a red card Q, and then he's off to the races, usually start running around. And I thought that was more about EG having a unique counter pick that no one else is going to really play in playoffs. And so if they ran that same topside combo again of their solo lanes against 100 Thieves, I'd be really concerned for 100 Thieves about, like, well, what's Ryoma going to pick to try and help this team out? So I overall liked what I saw at TSM. To your point, Kobe, it's about if they think they can get it a little bit better, because it wasn't great any of the times, but I like the new looks.
The Nico thing, like, I'll give you, is a unique counter pick, right? And that is unique to Jizuke. But my question is more just, is there not meta picks that do the same thing? Because I see Tristana and Lucian as basically doing the same thing, right? Where you're putting so much pressure on the TF that the idea is that the TF can't move. I've even seen Rumble used in that way. I don't really think that that's going to come out, you know, from Ryoma or anything. But there are other picks, right? Are these picks that can put pressure on the TF. Like, Tristana is probably going to be banned out. Like, I'll give you that.
Lucian was banned. Tristana was picked, and they could have flexed it down or into mid lane potentially. So maybe it was a little risky for that reason. But they did at least kind of cover their bases with the Lucian ban. So I think it shows at least that they're aware of some of the meta answers that could have come in.
I mean, the three main counter picks for Twisted Fate are the Tristana, Lucian, and Sylas. Sylas is the other one too, with the, you know, stealing ult and stuff, and being able to scale so well now, with the extra buffs as well. So there definitely are, you know, other possible answers.
It's also interesting to me because I think it's like, if TSM play these different styles, it's always a question of less about can PoE pilot a TF and more about how does the team function when he is fulfilling a different role, right? And it's a similar thing to when people talk about top laners. It's like, oh, why don't you play Fiora? It's like, even if you can pilot Fiora, your team has to entirely change the way you play around it, right? If you're going to have PoE on TF, you need to be, you know, sometimes, to your point, Mark, you're talking about like, it's so hard to move, you have to sack waves. Well, guess what? You don't get to have perfect farm on TF. That's not your job. You need to be making plays. You need to be able to accept that you're not going to be the 12 CS per minute, you know, Azir, and instead you're going to have a bunch of kills and assists, and you're going to be down farm because you moved around the map and you snowballed the game, and that's how you pressure it, right? So it's like that thought process has to change. I'd also say you have to make sure that you're accounting for your lack of teamfight damage through draft, unless you think you have a true, like, hardcore split push win condition, right? Unless you are actually going to try to end the game through side lanes with Camille TF backdooring and whatnot, you have to either extend your gold lead enough that you can then, you know, win a 5v5 without a 5v5 comp, or have enough trust in Lost or whoever that they are going to be able to then carry the 5v5 without the additional presence of PoE that they have kind of come to rely on. So those are more the challenges that I think TSM really has to overcome. And I think any team has to overcome when they are changing those play styles, is that it's not just can you play the champion, it's can you change the mindset and can you fulfill what is lost by changing that play style?
Yeah. For sure. And I mean, that game also, we're talking a lot about mid lane isolation, but there was like insane jungle pressure, if I remember, from the Nico, like, constantly invading. And I think they might have killed Spica a time or two, and also influenced topside. So it was a tough series for TSM. Like, that was way closer of a series. They were really pushed, actually. There were some sketchy situations that they got into. But it's almost like... you know, because 100 Thieves didn't feel like they were pushed at all, it's hard to say, like, oh, they've improved. Whereas TSM, while having an uglier series, went up against an opponent that at times actually felt like they were playing pretty well. So I mean, go ahead. It was weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 3-1 for TSM, but it felt like they could have lost that series, right? There's like a couple little moments, you know, people obviously were giving a lot of heat towards Deathly, you know, getting hooked mid lane, dying. Then the Kai'Sa team fight, I think in what was the final game where he kind of dives in and trades one for one,
just
but dies.
It out, yeah.
You know, so like those moments were really close, right? This was a 3-1 for TSM, but it did feel like, ooh, if a couple little things changed, maybe that's a 3-1 for EG, you know? So it was close. It was actually a really close series. That one felt a lot more contested, obviously, than the 100 Thieves Dig one. So I'm excited. I don't know that we'll see TSM repeat that. You know, if I was TSM walking away from that, if you think that the extra week is going to give you enough that you really polish those strategies, then sure, maybe bring it in against TSM. But I felt like they were kind of lucky to walk away with a 3-1, given how close a lot of those situations were and how many mistakes were being made by them with this compositions, because they looked less comfortable doing it. So that's going to be the biggest question on my mind is what do they bring to the table? Are they going with this kind of more newer look, more playing for globals, trying to break the trend of just looking more purely for 5v5, or will they go back to what's tried and true for them?
All right, prediction time. What do you got? Lay it all out on the line.
I still favor TSM just because it feels bad, but like I didn't change my opinion about 100 Thieves because it didn't feel like Dig contested them at all, right? Just felt like they were beating up a high schooler. It's like put Mike Tyson in the ring against high schooler, yeah, he beat their ass. And it didn't really feel like it changed anything for me. I don't think he's a better fighter now. So
he's already Mike Tyson. So
But given the fact that Dig just put up so little resistance, it felt like that I didn't feel like I could get a real judge on the series. And 100 Thieves prior to the series have been doing so poorly. I mean, coming into the series, they were 0-6 against playoff teams with this roster. They're now 3-6 against playoff teams with this roster with that Dignitas series. I don't think that they're going to be.
I heard Freak say that too, and he even couched it with like, "Oh yeah, well half of those are Cloud9." I'm like, yeah. That's a big couch, okay? Yeah. Because Cloud9 are definitely the worst matchup for this team. They clearly also have a mental edge over them, as well as in-game edge. So I'm like, okay, that is it definitely is one of those ones.
The second round of playoffs and had won 0 games against a playoff team, you know, like. It's concerning. And they just hadn't looked good since they've been with Ryoma. They just haven't, right? And even the last couple of weeks with DeMonte, they weren't looking good. I don't know, man. It just didn't change my opinion. I think that they still are showing, they still have yet to show that they can be that good team again. Yeah, so I'm saying TSM 3-1.
I'm saying TSM as well, probably 3-1. And I think the big thing is the soul laners for me. I think Fake God kind of got ran over in that series and just, generally for most of the split was playing weak side anyways, and that's TSM can do that, but there's plenty of times where they give attention to Huni and actually give him counter picks and do kinds of things that you just don't see, and it made draft easy, it made executing the game plan easy for 100 Thieves that'll be contested more, as well as we kind of already highlighted the mid lane situation where I think there's a pretty big gap in TSM's favor. Bot lane, like I don't think Lost and Sword Art are a pushover. I think, you know, this is another area where I'd give 100 Thieves the benefit, and if I think they're going to win, it's probably going to come through, again, decent play through bot lane, and if Closer and the rest of the team can actually find leads around the map through the first 15 minutes of the game. But otherwise, I think, you know, late game and some of the individual matchups are in TSM's favor.
I am so surprised that you're saying TSM and you're not mentioning mid lane, because to me, the top lane one, I'm like, well, Huni actually made a decent amount of mistakes, even though they were able to utilize the Nocturne later effectively. His lane phase was not great. Like, I could see someday hulking out on Huni also, but the mid lane, that is where I'm for sure like, yep, TSM all the way. Like, this is just. I mean, gigantic here. I think it was such a big strong point for TSM. You didn't have to mention it. Is that why, Mark? Yeah.
I mentioned it quickly. I said mid lane. I think is yeah. I said soul lanes, and for sure mid lanes in the favor there.
Okay.
I slammed Ryoma a little bit already. I didn't want to go back into it.
Okay. Yeah. I think that. Yeah, I'm probably a little bit, you know, it sounds like further on the 100 Thieves side than you guys are, but. if I'm trying to lay down my money on this one for predictions, I would feel like I am risking. I'd be taking a risk on my money if actually gonna, you know, predict 100 Thieves.
You want some better odds? Is that what you're saying? You want like a 60% payout? You want 50-50 payout? You want?
Yeah,
I mean, at the end of the day, 100 Thieves just doesn't feel like it's changed that they push the pace of the game, and they feel like a worse late game team than TSM. And that's at the end, like, really what it comes down to me is that 100 Thieves has never been, to me, this amazing late game team. It's that they created advantages early, that they were really aggressive, that they pushed the pace, and that's where they really felt like they shined, and they've lost that, and they didn't feel like they regained it in Digtoss series.
I think The other thing too, for me, when talking about how good Someday played this series, is to remember that a week ago he got pretty heavily outperformed by Fudge in a series, and while he looked great against Fake God, like I said, I just didn't think that he was challenged at all. Like, none of the pressure almost ever went top, other than the third game where I think he even died to that gank.
Yeah, he got first blooded.
Yeah. So, like, you know, like, I just think Huni, to, you know, Kobe's point, is not, like, the god of top lane who is immune to making mistakes. I think there will be times in this series where Someday does outperform him, but I just don't think it's an auto win like it kind of was against Dig.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go TSM also. I could throw down the 3-2 to have it on record that I think that it is closer.
I did pull this out of you.
I did for the when we sent our predictions in at the beginning of the day for the playoffs for yesterday. I did actually get the 100 Thieves 3-0 though. Slam that one down.
Good for you. Most people said, even the people who said 100 Thieves did it. Like, for me, I said 3-2. You know, I was like, oh, yeah, they didn't look great, but.
Yeah, I was expecting so much more from Dig, dude. I got baited.
Even me with the 3-0, I was still expecting more. So definitely with you there.
Next series here, TL versus Cloud9. This one actually comes first in the week, I do believe. But this one, I think, it just felt like these two teams are on a collision course for each other for finals pretty much the whole year long. I am so excited for this series. It feels clearly like the two big teams. It feels like the two teams with the most stacked rosters. I think that it's going to be incredibly exciting. And they have pretty different play styles, right? And I'm really interested to see what Jensen wants to bring out. And I'm looking really heavily at the mid lane because, you know, it's just kind of a cool story, right? Like, Jensen was considered number two to Bjergsen for so many years and always wanted to be kind of that number one. And then as soon as Bjergsen retires, Perks comes in, everyone's like, oh yeah, Perks is better than you. And, you know, he wins all pro. But Jensen has had a pretty kind of showing in playoffs where he's actually busting out new champions. He did it towards the end of the regular season as well, bringing out the Vhagar, bringing out the Ahri. So I'm so interested to see what he is cooking up here and what the mid lane is going to look like. I'm so hopeful that it's not just going to be like Orianna versus Azir. It's going to be Perks busting out the Yone and Jensen busting out picks. And I want to see the tech and I want to see these guys flexing on each other because I think that can make for an incredible series.
New Akali. You want some new Akali coming back in after the...
It's broken.
The extra
damage. That's 11-6. We're not there. Thank God.
That's what I was sad about. When you say thank God, I really want it to be 11-6 so that our teams get the most time on the MSI patch. But alas, I don't think you know, to that end, Azale, I don't think we're gonna reach much outside of what we've seen. Maybe like, woo, Seraphine mid. like that's not really what you're looking for, right? Maybe the Sylas, we haven't seen a lot of that mid, but we already did see it once. So honestly, I think those may be the spiciest ones, like the Yone, the Sylas getting in there, a couple of melee champions. It's not going to be completely, you know, control mages, but since we're still on 11-5, no big surprises coming out.
I think
out.
We could see Aurelia and stuff from Perks as well. He's down for the melee champions.
He already played that, right? So it's like,
but that's still spicy. And I think that Jensen, if Jensen is willing to bring out like Ahri and like, if you know, a Vhagar into a Perks Azir or whatever, that to me is spicy. That's really exciting because there's a difference between doing it against a team that you feel like you're just going to smack and okay. doing it against TL versus C9 in playoffs, best of five, the other team that everyone is expecting to be, you know, like the Titan. It feels like these guys are the two biggest title contenders right now. So I just want to see it.
They're the two in the winner's bracket. So that's for sure.
Yeah, I think just to hype the mid lane more, like through playoffs, they haven't played that many games, only seven games between the two teams. But they've played seven unique champions in those seven games. No one has repeated the champion yet, and there's a wide variety of play styles. The Ahri, the Yone. Actually, they might have both played Ori once. Damn it, I lied. There's six unique champions. Anyways,
just keep going.
Fake hype. They got the TFs, the Sylas, the Yone, the Ahri, the Tristana mids. Like, I know these aren't all, you know, like new in the meta, to your point, Kobe, but at the very least, it shows a flexibility of mid lane champions that you will see probably counterpicking. You will see people actually using their stuff well instead of handshaking default Azir Ori every game. You know, with like maybe a Zoe thrown in there or Syndra. You know, like I think you'll see at least cleverer drafting. I think that extends to a lot of the other positions as well. I don't think anyone in this series is really handicapped into a playstyle. Like, even Fudge and C9 have been better about playing around him recently. And so while that's obviously Alfari's wheelhouse, is like, let's play some carries, bro. Like, at the very least, I don't think, you know, C9 just need to tuck their tail between their legs and go, okay, here's Gragas, you know, have fun, Fudge. We're going to not mess with him. I'm really excited to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I mean, Alfari did specifically say that he has spicy picks prepared, so.
But is he going to bring them out? I feel like people say that stuff all the time.
Yeah, you just say that in interviews to keep the enemy team guessing, you know? Yeah.
I had this one really specific counter pick, but they just didn't end up going in that situation where they locked in.
I'm so creative. I just got all these just great plans.
I had the perfect LeBlanc top counter pick, and just no one went for it. You know, it's unlucky.
No one picked the Janna top, which it's so good against. I was just waiting. I mean, Fudge, it's interesting, right? Because Fudge has kind of had this redemption arc where he was getting slapped left, right, and center in lock-in. He was getting dunked on by everybody. TL did win lock-in, you know, largely in part due to the enormous top gap, right, that there actually was of Alfari versus Fudge. So having them meet again here in playoffs after everyone's like, all right, you know, this Fudge guy, he's not so bad. He's pretty good. I can respect him, right? Now it's a final boss. Alfari again in the top lane in a best of five for Fudge. This is undebatably the best laning top laner in the league that you're going up against. It's someone that's very flexible. It's someone that has an incredible jungler behind him in Santorin who isn't just going to roll over against Blabber. So I think that the top lane is also incredibly exciting. I mean, really across the board, this is just a banger match. I think really all lanes you could talk about and get really hyped for. But I'm so interested to see how Fudge looks against Alfari, because I don't think he needs to beat Alfari for Cloud9 to win this series. But I do think he needs to hold up, right? He can't just be a liability where you have to be babysitting him the whole time to keep him in the game. And that's kind of how lock-in felt. So I really want to kind of see the proof, if the proof is in the pudding. You know, can he actually show that he's raised his gameplay up to a much higher level and compete against this guy?
Yeah, it's funny that we were talking about you know, Fudge and his ideology around trash talk early on in the show, mm-hmm. because this is also one where we've got Jensen and his early trash talk. If you remember, right when Perks joined the league, he was asked about you know, Bjergsen finally leaving and, you know, the number one mid laner spot, and he just dropped it out there. He was like, yeah, I don't think Perks is going to teach me nearly as much. I don't have as much to learn from him as I even did from Bjergsen. He also was saying that Cloud9 are not as strong with Perks as with Niski. So like, he was just like, you know, comparing and putting, you know, Flaming Perks basically comparing to both of the previous, you know, mid laners that have contested him for number one. Whether that is, you know, just, you know, the regular trash talk coming out and, you know, putting down the new competition and building up your old opponents, the honorable opponents, now that they have both left. North American
nice thing he's ever said about Bjergsen, yeah, after, like, he's out.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Bjergsen's gone. Yeah, he was so freaking good.
Love that
guy. Niski went back to EU. Man, that guy was insane. I think the timing on it's pretty funny.
I mean, Core JJ also throwing a lot of shade around this split. I feel like he's been doing that a lot for the last like year mm-hmm. and a half now. So I expect that we'll see some more trash talk in the week leading up to this match, and especially after whoever wins, there are plenty of players who are definitely ready to meme on them.
Did you see the tactical tweet to Sven and Vulcan?
What?
Tactical tweeted them, and it, like, you know, it was basically him and Core, like, right at the
top of Solo
queue. And he's like, oh, you guys missing Duo queue, right? Because they're not at the top of Challenger anymore, and Sven and Vulcan were kind of known for doing all the time. And then Vulcan just responds with, like, a picture of, it's like tactical space on Tristana jumping in. You know, and then Core JJ had, like, a Photoshop of, like, Vulcan's face as, like, a McDonald's drive-thru guy or whatever. It's like, it's pretty funny. The trash talk, I think, has been starting. It feels pretty good natured, I would say. But you know, it's fun to see them kind of getting in on the banter, because these feel like our two best bot lanes, right? They're really performing at an exceptionally high level. I felt like Vulcan actually got kind of robbed on first team all pro. I thought he was actually better than Core this year in this split. I felt like that was a little bit of kind of, I don't know, hangover or leaveover from Core being so good for so long. Everyone kind of just defaulted to it in some ways, or at least some people maybe have. But you know, as far as actually what he showed on stage, I thought Vulcan was outperforming. So this is an opportunity for maybe them to really go at Tactical and Core JJ. It feels like this is the most vulnerable they've been in a while, because Tactical isn't having his best split.
Yeah.
And Core JJ, you know, maybe it's somewhat related to that, but Core didn't look like a god this split. He did not look unstoppable this split. I've barely heard anyone even mention him for MVP, whereas at the start of the year, it was like, oh yeah, Core's going to win MVP again this year. Didn't you see him in the in-houses where no one could beat him, and he's unstoppable, and he's also so smart and handsome, and look at him go. And, you know, he kind of fell out of that conversation completely. So I think bot lane is also going to be really, really exciting. They can all play meta picks. I want to know if there's any sort of counters that they're going to be willing to bring out, anything a little bit more aggressive to try to punish some of these lanes, like the Kalista Thresh situationally could be good, like the Vayne into Kai'Sa could be good.
I would definitely disagree that they're the two best bottom lanes in the LCS, though. I would definitely argue
against
that.
Do you think FBI is still?
Yeah, for a lot of the things that you mentioned afterwards. And it kind of felt like after you said it, you were like, explaining a lot of the points against why it might not be true.
That's true. I mean, it's just over the last like year or two maybe. But yeah, tactical and Core, I think, haven't been as good this year. So I rescind that statement. Take it back.
Never mind. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, I was gonna say just you know, I think it's the other part of the equation that makes this matchup volatile a little bit is like, what is tactical gonna do? And we talked a little bit about Fudge on the top side being a question mark for C9. I think that's the case for tactical for TL. It's just, his Jhin looked way better. I actually really liked his Sivir. It feels like if you take away the ability to jump 800 units forward, he looks a lot better, because once he was back on that Tristana pick in game two, was it? Like, there were a number of these like 3v1 jump-ins that killed him once bot lane, almost killed him a number of times in the mid to late game. And it just makes me still a little hesitant around him, just knowing that, like, you know, anytime your AD carry, which is supposed to be one of the most consistent positions in the game, has the ability to just try and throw a team fight by himself, like, it just gets a little scary.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm imagining you being real, real skittish now next time you see tactical walking around. But honestly, with Tristana, you do need to have killer instinct. You do also need to have fear that has evolved in humans due to the natural evolution, keeping you alive so that you can pass on your genes to the next generation, and they can be the next generation of AD carries that will also have the killer instinct, but be able to avoid some of those situations.
Between a Blaze Olives, Tristana, and Tacticals, I'm still kind of going with this one for sure.
Fair enough.
I don't know which hand was which.
Yeah, we just got to smile or nod. I think that was tactical. I think it was tactical.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now I just lost it. All right. Yeah, you know, bottom lane, that's great.
I'm love sorry. It.
Agree.
Last thing we
have. Wait, I could just do this. I remembered my save all.
Last thing we haven't really touched on, I guess, is Santorin and Blabber. Which it's funny to feel like, oh, this is just kind of an added thought, right? As it is probably the best and second best jungler in the league. These guys are both monsters. I am going to be interested to see if there's any sort of, you know, change in jungle priority, if there's any picks like the Kindred maybe coming out situationally, or, you know, enough bans to try to push them down to the tier two. If people really think that is going to be worthwhile, you know, what are you guys expecting from the jungle matchup?
Go ahead, Mark. Go ahead. Then.
No.
I started because there was such a delay. I think Santorin has done a really good job, better than any other jungler in the entire league, at dealing with Blabber. It's one of the reasons why I'm going to predict Team Liquid in this matchup. That has led the way to not only lock-in tournament, but they beat Cloud9 in the regular season as well, both their games. And I thought that was a large part of it, whereas so many other matchups, you see Blabber is just, you know, turbo smurfing. Part of the reason why people actually started to retract a little bit from Blabber godlike MVP status at the end of the split, what were some of the losses that they suffered at the hands of Team Liquid and Santorin? He does not roll over to some of the early skirmish plays. He also reacts better, I feel like, when Blabber is, you know, going to strong side, making one of these plays. I think Santorin had very efficient routes. He doesn't give up, you know, completely mangle his route to try and come up with some way to stop this genius Blabber. In one of the games, it was as simple as literally full clear gank topside, full clear again, like repeat ganks. I feel like he does not panic against Blabber, which it does feel like some of the other junglers in the league have started to do.
Yeah, I love watching these two play every single time. I think Blabber's got the better resume this split, but to your point that it's actually something that Santorin usually holds up pretty well at, and they've gone back and forth in my mind about, or, you know, over the course of their careers a little bit, who's the best jungler in the league. Like in 2020, it's like, oh, Spring is easily Blabber, but Santorin's number two. And then when C9 fell off in summer, I was like, ooh, I think Santorin was actually incredible this split. And I think I put him number one for my All Pro that vote. These are pretty easily the best two junglers in the league right now and over the last year and a half or two. So I can't wait to see what they do. And like you said, they both sometimes have some things that they can pull out. Though I think there's a little bit more meta play to Santorin than Blabber.
All right. What are you thinking for the predictions then? Kobe already said he thinks it's going to be TL.
I'm disappointed in my boy Kobe.
They beat him in lock-in. They beat him in both games in the regular season. Every time they match up, Cloud9 crumbles, dude.
But yeah, but you put him number one with me at the start of the regular season. You don't believe? You think Kobe
Idiot? Mark. They were number one in the regular season. That's correct. Job done. That was a regular season ranking. That's not playoffs,
and,
bro.
And I thought that was going to hold true for playoffs as well. I didn't realize that was just how good you think they are. Sorry, I had to swipe my cat there for a second. I think it's a C9-3-2. I'm going C9-3-2. I think that they have a little bit more dynamic play that I am looking forward to them being able to use to generate advantages in the best of five.
It is weird because the regular season evidence definitely is in TL's favor, but when I think back to lock-in and I try to compare the teams, like who improved more between the lock-in best of five and this best of five, I feel like Cloud9 improved much, much more than TL did. I still feel like TL regressed somewhat, even though they look like a really strong team. And that series with Fudge getting top gapped absolutely like every game was still a 3-2, right? I think that Fudge has improved enough that he's not just this huge liability, this like black hole in the top lane that's just sucking up all your resources. So I think, you know, he's still going to lose to Alfari, but I think he's going to be strong enough. And Perks historically has just been so amazing in playoffs. That's the other thing that is kind of popping into my mind is like, he has just done it every time. You know, he has the most LEC championships of any player. He's been great internationally. And he has had down seasons during the regular season as well in EU. And he just always brings it for playoffs. He plays at a higher level. So, you know, I'm really excited for this series. I do think it's going to be C9. I'm hoping for a five-game series. I'm going to say C9-3-2.
Playoff buff. Yes. The extra sauce on there. Can't really craft an argument against playoff buff except to be like,
it won't work.
He's not this time. I think it's funny that you guys both flip-flop from your regular season ones on each other.
It's playoff times, Mark. This is a best of five. Different gameplay.
I predicted regular season like 3 months ago or whatever, and now I watch 3 months League of Legends and I have a different opinion.
I think a lot of it, honestly, I would attribute a lot of it to people losing faith in tactical. That's why I can totally see, you know, that's why I thought most people are actually going to do
down,
the,
fudge these, up.
Yeah, that's why I thought a lot of people are going to do the Cloud9 one. So, but I'm sticking with the TL one. I'm not budging. I think tactical definitely slumped, but he's got a playoff buff as well. Isaiah, you see his playoff buff in his rookie year and how he played at Worlds.
True.
Same thing is true. So that's how actually I'm countering your playoff buff.
But you counter my playoff buff with a playoff buff of your own. With a blue eyes white dragon.
Oh, no.
All right.
Saved. Got it.
On to the anchor questions here. First one comes from KSM.
Hey, Mark Z, Kobe, Azale, how you guys doing? I'm a longtime listener and big fan of the podcast.
I like the voice.
And I was wondering, as you guys know, last year, TSM lost first round to Golden Guardians and came back and made an epic run through the lower bracket to win the whole thing. If they were to do the same thing this year, do you think that is the biggest comeback in LCS history? I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts. Gaffer Kobe, see you guys.
Biggest comeback.
I hear things like that, my initial reaction always no, and then I'm like, let me examine, because like it's such a big thing to say, you know, biggest or, you know, most extreme comeback.
I mean, if you're talking about runs, the Cloud9 gauntlet reverse sweep all the way through the gauntlet, that's crazier.
Yeah,
this isn't that.
Yeah,
I think the weird thing too is like it's a loser's bracket run, and we've only had loser's brackets for three splits, right? Like starting in spring last.
And Cloud9 Gauntlet didn't get a loser's bracket, right? They're like, yeah, you have to win all straight from the beginning. So
it was all they reverse finished, sweeps. That was crazy.
They finished seventh or something in the regular season. They weren't even in that playoffs, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And then they made that insane run. So like that one, I think could still fit into this criteria of like disappointing thing into like insane run. And so I would totally agree that Worlds run, especially with like two of the three being reverse sweeps as they did it. I mean, TSM last, to put some respect in it from last year, they had multiple five, I think all of them were five game series. They played so many games in the playoffs. I don't think the level of competition was that insane given that C9 had kind of fallen off pretty hard. I don't think the team.
I don't need any more explanation, crazy. Mark. Azale got me.
Just know.
As soon as Azale said Cloud9 Gauntlet, I was like, yep, you're right, man. Done.
True. We're
next
true.
Question.
All right.
Let's go.
Thank you. Next question. This one comes from Simon Vaughn.
Hey, team. My name is Simon, calling from Australia. I wanted to ask about active items. It seems to me that whenever we add an active item that might, part of the goal might be to cover for some weaknesses in some champions, rather than helping with weaknesses, they really seem to mostly just double down on strengths. So I'm thinking about how mages with CC buy Everfrost so they can lock you down for even longer. I'm thinking about champions like Echo building the old rocket belt so that he could be even more mobile. I wonder if you think it's possible to balance these kind of items in a way that means they offer more diversity for champions rather than just locking people into their existing strengths. I suppose Gale Force might be one where it feels like immobile champs actually do build it. But yeah, can you hear your thoughts? Thanks, team. Bye.
I think this is a cool question. And largely, I kind of agree with him when I was thinking, you know, about counterpoints. Like there are some, right? It's like, well, Orianna's not really a CC champion, but wants Everfrost to lock people down so you can hit the shockwave. Like that's kind of covering up for that. As he said, Gale Force for Jinx and Sivir. Hey, like they don't have any mobility. Now they do. So there are examples, but largely it's like, you know, think about all the go fast items. Champions that don't go fast already aren't buying these items. You know what I mean? It's like, if you're a run at you champion, you buy the run at you item to run at you faster, right? Like, you're getting the chem tank, you're getting the dead man. There's not a lot of examples where it's like, oh, you're kind of not that style of champion, and now you become that style of champion by purchasing an item. And that's always more like the gets into the Dota discussion to me, where it's like, you have to decide, where does the power lie in your game, and how are you defining the playstyle? Are you defining the playstyle not by the champion, but by the items, or are you defining it by the champion, you know, and kind of like augmenting that by the items? And that's more the League of Legends style, whereas like Dota, there's a lot of examples where it's like something can actually be a support character, but then you buy, you know, full on carry style items, right? And you have these things like, you know, you have Blink Dagger that can completely change your role in the game, completely change the way that you can play.
Yeah, I think that utility like Everfrost, like, you know, Stridebreaker, like, you know, Chem Tank is just so OP that you have to you would have to put something that bars champions from buying it to have people not buy it, because everybody, like you're saying, is just it's not like champions with dashes are not also going to buy more dashes. The extra mobility is still insanely powerful. It might even have a multiplicative effect in some cases, where like Nocturne, you want to ultimate in and you already, oh, I have a guaranteed gap closer, but guess what, if I have another one that also slows you, then it keeps you within the tether range, and then I just guarantee every part of my kit. So it, honestly, to me, when I was thinking about how would you force those restrictions, I wouldn't like how you would force it into the game. And it would have to be something like, you know, the Cosmic Drive restriction, where it doesn't work unless you have X amount of AP. Like, you would almost have to have like, this dash doesn't work if you already have a dash in your kit and be disabled. And I'd be like, that feels really bad, you know, to have it that way, just because I knew as soon as the preseason was announced and they were introducing mobility and utility into items, where you're mentioning Dota, I'm like, finally, we can get stuff like, are we going to get like the Cyclone Rod as well? Like, some of these things have crazy potential to impact the game. And League has always been a game where they actually reduced active items and items with that big impact, you know, Deathfire Grass out of the game, stuff like that. So I'm really not surprised that these active items have been so popular on so many different champions, as well as them taking stances like the Everfrost thing. Nobody was buying it, and it often feels like they take the stance of like, well, we got to juice this item. And so they buff it a whole bunch to actually, you know, too powerful of levels until people buy it. And they're focused a lot more on, do people buy it, rather than is the power level, you know, at a balanced state. And they try and nudge people into, you know, using and buying other items that they haven't bought before by overjuicing them. Because already now we're getting, oh, finally people are buying Everfrost, you know, goal accomplished, we super juiced the item, now we're going to nerf it back. But you're going to remember that this item exists. Ah, now that it's been OP.
Yeah, I think, especially in pro games, people are drafting champions to do very specific things in the game. Like, I want you to be able to be engage or set up or follow up. And mm-hmm. So you need Chem Tank, for example. Or from the mid lane, like, this is a champion that doesn't have mobility but likes protobelt, is TF. Back in the day, TF often went protobelt to get gold cards off, and then they go RFC, which is another item, not an active, but it's very much around the idea that I'm going to extend the range from which I can lock someone down. And so I do think, you know, to Zale's point, there are pretty decent counterexamples, but generally speaking, you're going to build the items that let you do your job better, because I drafted you to do that. I usually picked you in a situation to want to do that thing, so now build the item that lets you do that thing. And there's not that many times where you have a champion and you go, oh my god, I really need to get this thing in here now. I'm going to build Warmogs on my Ashe because I'm not mobile and I'm going to get dove and I need health to not die. Like, that's those kinds of things just don't work as well. And what you say instead is like, well, I'm just not going to let myself get in that position and I'm going to build the items that still make me do my job. Mm-hmm. To the Dota point, I think one of the things that people often tunnel on the item side of the discussion, but it's, I think, a lot of the ways in the champion kits as well. They allow more broken interactions in that game, what you would classify as broken interactions from a League perspective, that allow the items to really warp a playstyle. Whereas in League, anytime there's an item champion combination that does whack ass stuff, it gets taken out basically. You know, like weird builds are not encouraged. And that kind of is one of the reasons I think that it's more than just the item actives, but like you see so many builds just crushed because they don't want to deal with APE. They don't want to deal with, you know, Tiamat, Urgot being broken right now. And like, you know, I think Dota doesn't shy away from those situations because so many champions have them at that point that it's balanced around it, whereas League does not want those kinds of situations.
Yeah, I mean, I played a tremendous amount of Dota 2, and Dota 2, I think, is exemplified by OP versus OP, right? Like, everything is broken. And so through that lens, maybe nothing is broken. But, like, you can very realistically get to the stage on certain champions where you are literally one-hitting enemies. Like, not ironically, he can one combo. I mean, no, you swing your axe one time and they die from full health, right? Like, you can get to that level of OP. And, you know, even some of these, like, one-shot spell-type builds and stuff, like, especially killing supports who are just, like, little poor rats running around, you know, spending all their money on wards and, you know, and dust and all the different things can be pretty extreme. So that's kind of the trade-off. Is it's like you have to define you're defining the champions more by the items than by the champions themselves, right? And League just doesn't do that, so I don't think it'll ever be as extreme as Dota. But I do think Gale Force and some of those things are actually really cool and did do at least some of what he's talking about.
Yeah, there's also little tweaks to be made, like his original thing here about champions buying stuff that goes along with their strengths versus champions that don't have that strength. For Sejuani, the most bought item is the Sunfire Cape, and she's not a run fast champion, right? For the Turbo Chem Tank squad, but Turbo Chem Tank, even though it has a much smaller purchase rate on this champion, has a 2% higher win rate because she's still a tank, she's still an initiator, and just because she has a dash doesn't mean she doesn't also benefit, you know, from being able to have a huge burst of move speed towards champions. So, cool question, love it. Long conversation on that one.
Yeah. All right. We got some Twitter questions now here. First one comes from Snow Canada. Says, "Hey, I watched the second TSM TL game and they picked Lucian. Rumble both flex. What are the rules? Excuse me, on Huhi going mid and Power of Evil going top to gain small rune advantages in lane. I assume he means Huni, not Huhi. This would mean TL messes up MR and armor runes. Is it worth it?
There are no rules.
Yeah." And it can be worth it. Yeah, it's those two things. Absolutely. It's just like solo queue. I mean, but at the end of the day, you have to be comfortable playing the lane, right? And I think that's one of the bigger problems is that it's like, is it worth sending your mid laner top and just having him mismanage the wave and like chain die to ganks and stuff? I feel like it's very different, especially sending your mid laner to top, like how they have to play out the waves.
I mean, yeah, when Jizuke did it against Alfari, and he sent the Nico top instead of whatever AD top they had. I forget which one it was, but it was an AD top.
Nectin or something?
Yeah, something like that. And there was like 5 to 10 CS lead. Alfari actually played really well, even with armor runes and calling team and stuff like that. So they weren't able to get a lot out of it. But I think it is a good, sparsely used tactic to try and get some extra lane pressure if you can snowball.
Yeah, I like doing it in solo queue if people are down for it. Sometimes you can just swap around if you pick the wrong runes or whatever. Can be pretty cool. All right, we got one more Twitter question here. This one comes from 3 Spring Rolls, please. Sounds delicious. All right, here's my question for the dive. Huge fan. With Gragas flexing top jungle support and a legit with the legit AP builds available, do you think we might see the big guy return to mid? Thanks for doing the show, Cat for Kobe.
He does get harassed pretty significantly by the control mages that are just flying all over the place. So I think it's pretty hard to do a mid lane Gragas. I always thought it was cool, though, because you get those crazy highlights where the super five head people are like throwing their barrel to ferment over here and then get while they pop out the ultimate and they flash body slam flash over to make sure you get hit by the ultimate in the correct angle and then into the fully. Yeah, fermented barrel. It's alcohol, okay?
Yeah, I think it's even called fermenting in the kit. Yeah, it says fermenting for 2 seconds.
There you go.
I think the biggest problem that he has now compared to back in his glory days is the damage reduction. Back in the day, it was like up to like 30% flat, and it lasted like 10 to 15 seconds. So to Kobe's point about the harass, like you just had like a permanent mini Alistar ult on, because like the cooldown between it being like the uptime on it was insane. And anytime it fell off, you just back off for a second. And I think you had probably higher base damages. So you had a little bit higher kill threat and gank setup where you could just E body slam level 3 with your jungler and kill a lot of mid laners.
You remember when you had to stand still to cast W?
Yeah, you just sat there, drank it for a little bit, and then you came out. You had like 45 base extra AD. It was the most insane steroid in the game when it existed. It was like 45 base AD and like 30% flat damage reduction. And it was just like, all right, lane against that dude, have fun. And he just body slams at you and starts whacking you. And most mid laners are just like, well, I lose that trade. That play pattern doesn't exist anymore.
Also did way more damage. Like when I first started playing League, Gragas mid was all the rage, and you just do like the Athene's rush, Gragas mid, and you were just like one-shotting people with your ult. Like it was so disgusting. If you were having a good game, like you didn't even have to do the fancy combo Kobe's talking about. You just freaking threw that shit in the back line.
The Baron steals. The Baron steals that came from AP
those
Gragas.
So funny.
Dude, it did like 1k damage just to flop that out there. You didn't even have to aim.
We would literally have analyst desk segments talking about, oh, well, they obviously cannot do Baron in this game because there's an AP Gragas on the other side of the team. Like, you can't do it.
It's a ranged Cho'Gath.
Yeah, max range R for Gragas now is 400 flat damage with 80% AP ratio. That thing before was for sure one or higher, and like the flat damage I think was like 600 by max rank, you know, and like...
Yeah. The DFG one shots and stuff too.
Yeah. So, I mean, AP Gragas works now because Night Harvesters is decent and you can kind of play him in an off AP carry position where, like, he's rarely your main source of damage, but he can provide more in certain matchups and stuff like that. If you put him mid lane, you're kind of being like, this is our guy. He's our damage threat for, you know, there's. And I don't think he, even matchups aside, fulfills that role that well.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if there's some sort of like carry jungle pairing or something, like, oh, I picked Gragas jungle, but then now it's not good and there's a good matchup mid and I could play with Kindred. I don't know, maybe. But it seems unlikely. But thank you, though, for the questions, guys. Keep sending them to us on Twitter, on anchor.fm. Keep leaving us the reviews on Apple Podcasts. We'll be checking more of those out next week. And that'll wrap it up for us for now. Thank you again, Honda, for making this episode possible. Sub to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/LCS, and the mid-season showdown continues this weekend. Team Liquid versus C9 on Saturday, April 3rd. 100 Thieves versus TSM on Sunday, April 4th. As always, we will see you again next week, Tuesday at 5 a.m. Pacific time and 8 a.m. Eastern time.